Can you tell me a story?
Sure. Once upon a time, a mom needed a new car.
Was she brave?
She was tired, mostly. But she went to Carvana.com and found a great car at a great price. No secret treasure map required.
Did she have to fight a dragon?
Nope. She bought it 100% online. From her bed, actually.
Was it scary?
Honey, it was as unscary as car buying could be.
Did the car have a sunroof?
It did, actually.
Okay, good story.
Car buying you'll want to tell stories about. Buy your car today on
Carvana.
Delivery fees may apply.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
Alec Murdaugh, lots of motions being filed, and as you know, in any sort of case, most of what matters in a trial happens before the trial even officially starts. Well, the defense is asking the court to test and why the lab and the case they cite change everything. That's what we are getting into here today as we look at the Alec Murdaugh retrial. When Maggie Murdaugh was killed, she had another man's skin under her fingernails, her left hand. Investigators collected it at the scene. The South Carolina Law Enforcement Division logged it into evidence as item number 70. They tested it. They determined the DNA came from a male who was unknown and unrelated to anyone in the family. Not Alec, not Paul, not one person they could attach a name to. DNA like that is the kind of thing investigators usually chase down because of how it tends to get there. A struggle, a grab, somebody's hands on a person in their final moments. The state had it. And then according to the motion the defense filed, ahead of the retrial, no further analysis was attempted. Interesting. That might be the most direct physical trace there is of whoever was close enough to Maggie to leave skin under her nails, if it wasn't Alec. And the people working her murder set it down and moved on. That sample sat in an evidence locker for years. Murdaugh's lawyers wanted pulled out and tested by an independent lab. At his own expense, of course. They named one specific lab, and in the same set of filings, they pointed to a murder case from another state and a man who lost his entire family. The lab they chose and the case they cite are the whole reason this matters. And most of the coverage drove right past it. The murders happened on June 7th of 2021. Maggie was 52. Her son Paul was 22. Both were shot to death at the family's hunting property near Islington, South Carolina. Down at the dog kennels on the land is where it happened. Alec Murdaugh was convicted of murder in March of 2023 and sentenced to two life terms. Then the South Carolina Supreme Court threw the convictions out. The court reversed the convictions over several issues, the loudest being jury tampering by the former Colleton County Clerk of Court, Becky Hill. So Murdaugh gets a new trial with the conviction erased. He heads into that trial presumed innocent the way the law requires. He stays locked up regardless because he's also serving a 40-year federal sentence for financial crimes, and the Supreme Court's decision did nothing to that. A new judge, Deborah McCaslin, has been assigned to the case. Murdaugh is headed back to court for the first status conference of the retrial. Just ahead of that hearing, his attorneys, Dick Harpudelin, Jim Griffin, Phil Barber, and Maggie Fox, have filed three motions. Two of them are housekeeping. One of them is a bomb. We're going to take the two housekeeping ones first. And as we go through this, your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube, we'd love for you to weigh in. Links are in the description. Because even the housekeeping ones say something. The defense wants a trial move, not just out of Colleton County, but out of the entire 14th Judicial Circuit. That is five counties in the area. Their argument is that this is among the most heavily publicized prosecutions in the history of the state. The Murdaugh name, they write, has been tied to the local legacy, to the local legal system for nearly a century. The population is small and interconnected. and the documentaries, the books, and the films that shaped how everyone already feels about Alec Murdaugh were researched and filmed and produced right there. Moving the trial to a neighboring county in the same circuit, they argue, would not cure the problem. This was not a surprise play. Harpootlin had said publicly for months that he intended to ask for a change of venue. The first trial was held in Waterboro, the heart of Murdaugh country, and played out over weeks of televised testimony followed across the country. The defense does not want to roll those dice again. The second motion sounds even more ordinary. They want Murdaugh to have a laptop in prison, specifically a secure one, encrypted, password protected. No internet, no cell connection, no way to record audio or video, locked in the warden's office when he is not using it. The reason is the sheer size of this case. The discovery is so voluminous that printed out, they say it would fill numerous bankers' boxes, much of it sealed or under a protective order. Strip away the legal language, and the defense is telling the court the evidence against their client is so vast it needs a computer just to see all of it. Not an unreasonable request. The third motion is why anyone is talking about this at all. It asks the court to order the state to hand over that DNA from beneath Maggie's fingernails so an outside lab can run it. To understand why that request lands as hard as it does, you have to back up to what actually turned the public against Alec Murdaugh in the first place. It was not DNA. It was a white T-shirt. The state's theory was that the shirt Alec wore the night of the killings carried Paul's blood. It was sprayed onto him in a fine mist, the kind you only get from standing right next to someone when they're shot. There's a name attached to the analysis, Tom Bevel. And the very first thing Bevel put on paper about that shirt was the opposite of what the world came to believe. The case against Alec Murdaugh was always built on circumstance, no matter how you look at it. No murder weapon was ever recovered. No eyewitness ever placed him pulling a trigger. There was no confession. There was no DNA tying him to the bodies. What there was, and it's not nothing, was his own voice, a video taken on Paul's phone at the dog kennels minutes before the killings, captured Alec talking after he had told investigators more than once he was never down there that night. His phone records and the data off his own vehicle put him on a timeline that did not line up with the story he first told. And at his first trial, Alec admitted from the witness stand that he had lied and he had been at those kennels after all. That single fact is the hardest one in the entire case to walk past. And any honest look has to say so. So why does the defense reach all the way across the country to an Indiana garage? Because of a man named David Cam. David Cam was a former Indiana State Trooper. In September of 2000, he came home to find his wife and his two young children shot to death in the family's garage. He was convicted of those murders twice. He spent 13 years in prison across three straight trials. A jury finally found him not guilty in 2013, and the evidence that put him away was blood spatter, a handful of tiny stains on his T-shirt that the state's experts swore could only have come from standing there as the shots were fired. What finally cracked that case was DNA. After Cam's first conviction was overturned on appeal, investigators went back to the unidentified male DNA found at the scene. It was on a sweatshirt that had been left behind alongside a set of fingerprints. They matched it to a man named Charles Boney. Boney was a violent felon with a long record of attacking women. He was convicted of all three of those murders and sentenced to 225 years. The man that evidence pointed to is the one serving time. David Cam walked out a free man. That is why the lab the defense picked is not a throwaway detail. They want the sample sent to a company called Ortham. By most accounts, Ortham is the best forensic genetic genealogy lab in the world. This is not some strip mall DNA shop next to the TCBY. Wouldn't that be interesting? Kate, Deck, we get yogurt? Yeah, we're going to go to the DNA shop next. Let's see what it tells us. Here's what they actually do. They take a DNA sample that the FBI's national database, CODIS, comes up empty on. Then they build a far bigger genetic profile, enough to find distant relatives, fifth cousins, seventh cousins. It's genetic genealogy. People the suspect never met. From there, the genealogist traced the family tree back down to a single name. It's the same approach that finally ended the decades-long hunt for the Golden State Killer. Ortham has been credited with helping crack close to 350 cases. We've heard about it in many cases we've covered right here. A lot of them murders everyone else had given up on. And it is not cheap, which is why the defense is offering to foot the bill themselves, somewhere in the range of $10,000 for the one sample. So Murdo's lawyers asked to send Maggie's fingernail DNA to Ortham specifically. They're saying something out loud. They think the DNA belongs to a real, findable person, or they think Ortham can put a name to him. And the two cases run into each other. A blood spatter analyst who testified for the prosecution against David Camm told the jury, the stains prove Camm was standing in the garage when his family was shot. The exact analyst is the one South Carolina later hired to examine Alec Murdaugh's shirt, Tom Bevel. So go back to the shirt and to the first thing Bevel wrote about it in February 22. His initial report concluded the stains on Alec Murdaugh's shirt were consistent with transfers, not back spatter from a gunshot. Transfers, the kind of mark you get from brushing against something bloody, not from being sprayed by a wound. That was his first finding. Then, according to motions the defense later filed, the state law enforcement division SLED leaned on him, and Bevel came back with a new answer. He said he'd filtered the colors of the shirt using Photoshop and that he could identify over 100 stains consistent with spatter. He said there was no possible way those stains came from anything other than Alec shooting Paul. The defense did not let that pass quietly. They filed a motion for sanctions, asking the court to throw out everything tied to Bevel. They called it manipulated opinion testimony. They accused the state of destroying exculpatory evidence in bad faith. The prosecution never put Bevel on the stand at the first trial. The fight over how a report goes from transfers to no possible way other than murder never happened in open court. The conclusion still did its work everywhere else. The documentaries and the headlines in the minds of people who decided Alec Murdaugh was guilty long before a jury ever said the word. And none of this means that the DNA under Maggie's fingernail is the answer. The honest read has to really say that plainly. The state has a strong response, and it's not a weak one. Touch DNA under a fingernail can come from almost anywhere. A handshake, a grocery cart, a doorknob. Friend of a relative who shook her hand a week earlier. Unknown and unrelated male is not a synonym for the killer. The jury never has to believe that trace means a single thing. And this is not the Camm case. The evidence that freed David Camm was a sweatshirt an intruder left at the scene and a set of fingerprints. Physical proof that somebody else had been there. A skin cell under a nail is a far thinner thread than that. The defense knows it. They're not claiming this one piece of evidence sets Alec Murdaugh free. They're claiming something narrower and much harder to argue with. They're saying nobody ever bothered to find out whose DNA it was. The state caught it, labeled it, and stopped looking. David Camm sat in a cell for 13 years while the answer to his case waited in a sample no one had run. That's the precedent the defense is holding up. And that's where the second trial is going to have to start. Whatever Alec Murdaugh did or did not do at those kennels on the night of June 7th, 2021, two people died there, Maggie and Paul. One of them came away with another person's skin under their fingernails. And whatever happened in their last moments, the next jury will have to decide what that means. Maybe the test points somewhere, maybe it points nowhere. But there's a difference between running it and learning it was nothing and never running it at all, and finding out years too late that the answer was sitting in a drawer. Indiana already lived that. Nobody should have to live it twice. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. This is one of many motions, one of many other cases that they're going to cite as to why evidence in the Alec Murdaugh trial should be introduced or taken away. So buckle up, buttercup, because there's a lot to come. Again, your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. We'll continue our conversation there. Until next time, my name is Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.